Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It's May the 21st. So we're in Mishnah Shusharim Perek Hey, Bever Mafsideh HaZihirus V'Archalka Mehem, explaining those things that take away from Zihirus and how one should stay away from those things. So Ramchal explains that there are in Zihirus there are three mafsidim. There are three things that could detract from Zihirus. There are three things that could take a person away from it. And they are being involved in this world, meaning being involved, caught up with things, being busy with things, and to have tirdus, to just have things that get in the way, and person is just very caught up and unable to think about avodas Hashem. They're just, even if the person is not doing averos, they're unable to think about where they are in their avodas Hashem. That's one. Two is, he says, is haschok v'alatzon. It's being too lightheaded and too much, overly joking around, too much so. And three is hachevra haraz, having a bad chevra. Those are the three things that take away from Zihirus. So, taking them one at a time, the first one, which is being too caught up in this world, he writes, is the most prevalent of the things that take away from Zihirus. It's the most prevalent one, but it is also the easiest to solve. Now, we already spoke about, he himself spoke about the inyan of being setting aside time each day to think about one's avodas Hashem, to have hisbonenus, to reflect upon where one is. And this is really the opposite of that. If a person doesn't set aside time to think, then they're naturally just going to be involved, and they're not going to have time to become a zohir. They won't, to become a zohir, one has to think about where they are. The Ramchal says that here we use what Chazal say, that Barasi Yetzahara, Hashem says, I created the Yetzahara, Ubarasi Torah Tavlin, and I created the Torah as its antidote. And as the Ramchal says, that if this is the antidote to the Yetzahara, that means nothing else is. Hashem said, I created the problem, and I created the solution. And if that's true, then there is no other solution. It's not like you can find an alternative. If this is the solution to the problem, then it is the only solution to the problem. The meaning of Torah in that phrase in Chazal, of Barasi Yetzahara, Barasi Torah Tavlin, is generally taken to mean learning Torah, which is certainly the Pashup Shad of what it means. The learning of Torah is the Tavlin of the Yetzahara. But obviously, it can't be limited to learning Torah, meaning the classic concept of sitting and learning Torah, because everybody, men and women, are beset by Yetzirah, and only men are mechuyev to learn Torah. And as we've spoken about before, a woman, even if she's permitted to learn Torah, but she's doing it as a non-mitzvah v'aisa, in which case it is not as powerful. The limud Torah that a woman does is by definition deficient to the limud Torah that a man does, because she's not mitzvah to do it. So since she's not mitzvah to do it, gadol mitzvah v'aisa, mimishena mitzvah v'aisa, and therefore it cannot bring a woman as close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the learning Torah of a man. And it therefore cannot be as potent an antidote to the Yetzirah as when a man learns Torah. So therefore, it can't mean simply limud Torah. So what it has to mean then is the way that limud Torah is applicable to each gender. So for men, limud Torah means limud Torah, and for women, it means to enable limud Torah. And the tavlin to the Yetzirah for a man is to learn Torah. The tavlin to the Yetzirah for a woman is to enable the limud Torah. Tibim ma'afsha, the limud Torah is the tavlin of the Yetzirah for a woman, the same way that limud Torah itself is the tavlin for Yetzirah for a man. I'm not talking now about how to be zaych to Olam Haba, which is also true, but I'm talking about how to have the most potent weapon to battle the Yetzer Hara.
When it says Torah Tavlin, why doesn't it just refer to doing the mitzvos? Why isn't
it could be, but then it wouldn't say Torah Tavlin. Barasi Yetzer Hara, Barasi Torah Tavlin. I'm saying that's a very general statement. Then any mitzvah. It doesn't seem to be
keeping the Torah. Why specifically learning the Torah?
It could be, but then it doesn't answer the question, because the Yetzer Hara is don't keep the Torah, right? The Yetzer Hara is telling us don't keep the Torah. So to say the way you fight that is keep the Torah.
Right.
Okay, shkach.
Right, so
it's got to be something that is some kind of connection. It can't just be a general statement, keep the Torah. So Pashup Shari is, it is Limud HaTorah, and it is, however that translates for each gender, whatever Limud HaTorah is. So for women, it's going to be Ma'afshah the Limud HaTorah, as we've spoken about many times before. So I mean, in Chazal, for a man, it says, in Pagabach Menuvel Zeh, if this Menuvel meets up with you, Mashchehu LeBeis HaMedrash, drag it to the Beis HaMedrash. So that is for a man. For a woman, obviously, it's not going to be Mashchehu LeBeis HaMedrash, but it's going to be the equivalent, which is going to be Mashchehu to whatever is going to be the woman's method of enabling Limud HaTorah. Now, he's equating this with getting away from the tirdus of Olam Hazeh. You see, a person can be tarud in Olam Hazeh with good things, but they're still tarud. I mean, a person can be very, very busy, but they're still tarud. So that you can be doing all good things. So you can be working, which is a good thing, and you can be doing chasadim and kibud avim and whatever other things that you involve yourself with, and you can be very, very busy with that, and at the same time leave no room for hisboninus, to just consider, where am I in my avodas Hashem? What am I focused on? What needs improvement? What has to be, what should be focused on? A person can be very, very busy even with good things, but they're still tarud. Now, the tirdus that he's referring to most is the tirda of parnasa. That's the tirda that he's referring to the most, that takes away from zihirus, that a person gets so caught up with making a living that they can't apply any brain power to their own avodas Hashem. However, even in doing good things, a person can get caught up, and it's not unusual that a person, especially a younger person, especially those who are around your age, that it's more prevalent there, because when you're at the age that all of you are at, it is not uncommon for a person to really become idealistic and focused on, I want to do good things, and really build their schedule in a way that is running from thing to thing to thing to thing to thing, and always doing good things, which is great, which is wonderful. No one's discouraging that. But even there, a person can overdo it to a point where there is no time to think about, where am I going? Where am I coming from? Where am I headed? What am I doing? Which is what Zahirus is really triggered by. So, but he's understanding that if what you're busy with is the gender-appropriate Limud HaTorah, then it doesn't have that problem. If that's your focus, if the focus of a man is Limud HaTorah, the focus of a woman is enabling Limud HaTorah, that's not going to detract from Zahirus. That's not a busyness that will detract. A busyness in other mitzvahs could detract. And again, I'm not Chas v'Shalom, I'm not saying a person shouldn't be busy in mitzvahs. It's a good thing to be busy in mitzvahs. But a person can theoretically be so busy in mitzvahs that they really have no time to think about anything else. So you do find there is a phenomena of a person who is, l'mashal, so involved in chasadim that they're so wrapped up with it, which is a wonderful thing, but they lose themselves. And that does have a drawback. And a person does need to leave time for themselves, not for themselves as in being selfish, like I have to have my ice cream, but leave time for themselves about, where am I in my avodas Hashem? Where do I stand? Where am I going? Yeah.
So if a woman's busy with her work because she's enabling her husband to learn Torah, that's not considered.
It seems from the way he's presenting it, because he segues into it. He talks about how you can be very, very tarud, and then he segues into Barasa Yetzar, Barasa Yetzar Tavlin. So the way the Mesillas Yesharim puts it, he doesn't say what I'm saying beferish, but the way you read it over here, the implication is that Barasa Yetzar Tavlin is not a problem. That won't detract. So now, it is totally though in having the right kavana. See, it's harder to do the enabling of Limud HaTorah than it is to do the Limud HaTorah in a certain way. And Limud HaTorah is hard to do. Everybody knows it's hard to sit and learn. But the advantage of sitting and learning is when you're doing it, you can't be doing anything else. You know you're doing it. But when you're working, you could get sidetracked with, am I doing this in order to enable Limud HaTorah? Am I doing this because I want to make money, or I'm doing this because I want prestige, or I'm doing this because I want to find expression for my talents. You know, a person can get caught up with other motives. So it does require thinking about the fact that I'm doing it to enable Limud HaTorah. Not that the other factors need to be discarded, but a person has to at least keep in mind that there's also the element here. If it wasn't for the fact that I was enabling Limud HaTorah, why would I be working? I'd be at home with my children and my husband would be working. Then why would I want to be doing this if I'm not enabling Limud HaTorah? So there has to be some focus on that in order for it to be the Barasi Yetzer Barasi Torah Tavla. As I said, the Ramchal does write that although this is the most prevalent thing that keeps from Zahirus, but it is the easiest one to get away from, because it doesn't take a completely overturning your life to get away from this. All it takes is taking a step back, building in some time to think. And that's really all it takes. It's not rocket science to figure out how to get away from this mafsid of Zahirus. Included over here, I've mentioned this to you before, I believe, he does say that the Torah itself does bring a person back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Gemara says, Halavai oisi azvu tarasi shamaru, halavai they should leave me but keep my Torah. Which mean, what does it mean, leave me but keep my Torah? But as HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying, I'm more concerned with Klal Yisrael not thinking about Torah than I am about them not thinking about me. Because shamar sheba machzir lemutav, that by thinking about Torah, the light of Torah will bring them back to good. I've shared this with you before, I believe, that when I was in high school in Eretz Yisrael, so different Rebbeim had different ways of dealing with Bachrim who were not B'nai Torah, who were not into the learning, who were getting involved in things they shouldn't get involved with. In my day, the things that people got involved with that they shouldn't have was different than today. But they do account for some very funny stories that happened throughout high school, which perhaps we can share one day. But different rabbis had different ways of handling that situation. And in a boys' yeshiva, in a high school, you're going to happen. I mean, you're going to have stuff going on. It's just the nature of the beast. You put a bunch of boys together in a dorm, you're going to have things that are going to happen. So just you hope the place won't burn down. That's very helpful. So I remember at the time that I was talking to one of my rebbeim about the general state of the mechina, the high school. So he was telling me how different rebbeim have different methods of dealing with. So he told me at the time that Rabbi Rosenbaum, today is a 12th grade rebbe in Eretz Yisrael. At the time he was an 11th grade rebbe. That his method of dealing with this, teach him Torah. Just teach him Torah. Don't get involved in that. He did this, he did that. It's irrelevant. Just teach him Torah. Because he really held of this. Perhaps he still does. I don't know what he does today. But he really held of this chazal, that the ikur is the limud Torah, because hamar sheba machzir lemutav. If he's learning Torah, all the other stuff is going to fall away. All the other stuff is going to solve itself. The ikur is to get him to be learning Torah, and then you've I don't know if it's 100% of the battle, but it's certainly 90% of the battle is done.
Does that work for women also?
So I imagine it does too, because
just enabling husband.
Yeah, because it doesn't have to be a husband.
Or
it can be any male. It doesn't make a difference. But the enabling, that's what Chazal are saying when they say Nashim Ba'ezachion. They're saying, I understand, Torah is the ikur way of getting Olam Haba and getting close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's nothing else that can bring a person as close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as Limud HaTorah, which means the same thing as Olam Haba, as Shleimus. It's all one thing. Shleimus, Olam Haba, Dveikus, all of that is all the same thing. And there's nothing that does that like Torah. So the Gemara is asking the Kasha, Noshem B'mai Zachen, if women do not have the Tzivui of Limud HaTorah, which means that they're in a Mitzvah V'Aisa, that means they're not able to access that dveikus, that shleimus, that olam haba, that schar, by learning. Even if a woman learns, she's not going to get it. She'll get something, but not that. Not what the Gemara is talking about, because she's animates of vaisa, which is necessarily diminished. So that's their answer, that the way that she gets it is by enabling her husband and her sons, the Gemara says, to learn Torah. But it doesn't, for a woman who is still single, it can be any enabling a Limud HaTorah will accomplish that goal. Yeah.
When a person is still single, besides for donating money to Kollel, are there any other methods?
So look, I don't like to couch it in this way, because there's so many family dynamics that go into this. But theoretically, enabling a brother to learn, right? I'll do the dishes, you go learn. Right, that kind of thing. In theory, that would work. Of course, he has to keep his end of the bargain, right? If he's a real masmid and he's going to go learn because you're doing the dishes, then you enabled him to learn, right? So you do have that.
Could be not interrupting your father.
Right, and it could be not interrupting your father. That is a bit, or just enabling your father, giving your father the space or the yishuv hadas or whatever it is. You know, you could call him because something is, you know, you're dealing with something, but he's learning. So you know what, right? That's also being ma'afshali meratar, right? It's not as direct, but it is there. So within the family, you can often find expression for that. But even if there are no males in the family, all the boys are grown, or there are no brothers, or that, you know, and the father is out of the house, whatever it is, it's still possible to be ma'afshal limud HaTorah. In other ways, you can be creative about it. There, you know, you can try to think of ways. But even making yourself a person that ultimately will be able to be ma'afshal husband and children, that's also part of it. And it's a few steps in advance, but it is still part of it. It all has to do with kavana. If you're mechaven, that look, most women today, most women today who grow up in a Torah home, they are looking for ways of being able to make a parnasa, and it's not because they're career oriented women. It's because they know that they want to be in a home where a husband is learning, and that they're going to be earning the money at least for the beginning of their marriage. So the even though the deep dark secret is that your chances of being able to retire after you have 8 kids is highly unlikely. So just the way it goes. That's the way it goes. But still that is the primary motivation for women today, young women today, to be looking for ways of making money. So that's still a kavana to be ma'afshal limud HaTorah. And everything goes according to the kavana. Everything is according to the kavana. Kadosh Baruch Hu, all he wants is rachmana libabai. That's what he wants. That's the ikar. Now, I think since we're on this topic, I've talked about to you about this before, but just because we brought it up, I told you this, that Chaimir and I used to talk about this in Columbus all the time, where we had in Columbus, where they taught, it was a K-12 school where the boys and girls were together for all the classes, including Gemara. And there were families where the girls were pushed to learn. And Chaimir had a girl in her class who made a siyum on a Seder of Mishnayos, whatever they were doing over there. So, you know, growing up in that environment, it's not impossible to. It's hard to avoid being influenced. So we talked very openly about this at a much younger age than we would have had to had she grown up in an environment more like here in Atlanta. And And so we discussed them. We talked about how you can have she and her classmate, that her classmate is learning Mishnayos with her father, and she is doing a chesed, Chaim Rimer is doing a chesed, so that in Olam Haba, her chesed brings her closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, gives her more schar, gives her more dveikus, does more for the tikkun of the velt, does more for bringing Mashiach than the limud haTorah of her classmate. And as much as her classmate wants to do good things, and it's laudable that she's trying to do a good thing, I mean, she doesn't know any better and she's trying to do good things, but lamaisa, what she's doing is deficient. It is accomplishing something, but not what your chesed is doing, not what your other mitzvahs are doing, because she's an ena mitzvah v'aisa. And an ena mitzvah v'aisa, by definition, is going to be deficient to a mitzvah v'aisa in all ways.
Okay. So if a woman is given a choice to come, like to share or to learn Torah versus doing a chesed, it's better that she go do chesed?
If you word it like that, the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. However, you also have to take into account, first of all, a woman has to know what to do. So the limud haTorah to know halacha, that's necessary.
Right.
And you can't really be a real Avedas Hashem without knowing what to do. So that's Aleph. And Beis is a woman also needs chizuk. And learning does bring about chizuk. And so you can't negate your own need for inspiration and for understanding and for growth. So when you ask it like that, is, you know, just all things being equal, is the chesed better than the limud haTorah for a woman? Absolutely. But usually things are not equal. So you have to take those things into account. Now, the second mafsid that he mentions is schaik and kalas reish. It's being overly silly. That's what he's discussing. And this is because of leitzonus. Leitzonus literally means to scorn something. It doesn't literally mean to joke or laugh. It really literally means to scorn. But when a person is a letz, a person laughs, you know, makes jokes all the time and is a very big letz, then what happens is mussar doesn't penetrate. That's the problem. And the mussar requires a certain degree of kavod reish, a certain degree of seriousness. And when a person is constantly laughing and joking and making light of things, then when things are presented, they don't affect the person. When you come away from a real schmooze, you go someplace and you hear a real schmooze, you can walk out of that schmooze and make one funny comment and it's all gone. It's finished. All the inspiration dissipates very, very quickly. When a person is inspired, it's important to allow that inspiration, that chizuk, to wash over the person, to feel it, to feel the seriousness of it, the importance of it. Because ultimately, life is not a joke. Ultimately, we're here for a very serious reason. Kadosh Baruch Hu put us here deliberately to do something deliberate. And joking and making light of things is by definition saying that things aren't that important. So that's the danger of too much kalas reish. And zehirus, which is to be careful about something, requires seriousness. So for example, if a child is prepared to run into the middle of the street, into the middle of Vista Road with cars zooming by, so if a parent admonishes that child and says, you better not do that, or it's terrible, whatever. The parent gives the child a schmooze about not doing it. And then someone standing nearby makes a joke and makes light of it. Are they not doing ritzicha? Are they not causing this child to disregard the warning of the parent and then chas v'shalom run into the street? So when something is important, you don't make light of it. You don't disregard it. Life is important. Life is serious. Therefore, when one is overly involved in kalas reish, then life itself becomes unimportant. And that's a terrible thing. Because life, at the end of the day, is the most important thing. It is what we have in order to do avodas Hashem. So we do not want to diminish that in any way. And when a person is overly involved in tzchayk and kalas reish, then that destroys any hope of growth. Now, because I'm talking to a group of people who are of the Hashem, so it's important to remember that to be a person who is constantly serious, who is unable to laugh and smile, is not healthy either. We happen to live in a world where Kalus Reish has been taken to the highest level perhaps it's ever been, where Kalus Reish is in the whole world is just one big Kalus Reish. Everybody laughs at everything. Everybody's looking for the next good line, the next good joke, the next laugh. There's very little that's taken seriously in the world today. And we culturally have to fight against that. However, there's also the danger of becoming a person where jokes are bad, laughing is bad, and that's not a good thing either. A person has to be a pleasant person. A person also can't be so serious where everything is terrible, everything's important, a person could become very anxious that way. And that's not healthy either. Kadosh Baruch Hu is not interested in us being anxious. That's not what he's looking for. He's looking for us to be calm, measured, pleasant. That's what he's looking for. But to take life seriously. So the point over here is not to negate all funniness. And some people are very funny. Some people have a natural talent at being very, very funny. And that's a talent that should be nurtured, that shouldn't be suppressed. That's a good thing because it brings joy to people. That's a good thing. But there's a difference between being funny and being pleasant, that and being silly. See, silliness is where you cross the line. The difference between funny, fun to be around, and then there's silliness. Even silliness has its place once in a while. Do a little shtick here and a little thing there. You know that can happen. But to take that too far, that's where it gets to be a problem, where a person's whole life is just looking to joke around, and that is a big detraction to Zihirus. And as the Ramchal writes, even though this is not as prevalent, although I think in today's day and age it is much more prevalent, but a person who is stuck in this, it's very hard to pull out of it. A person who is not taking life seriously and is just everything is a joke, it's hard to pull away from that. You develop for yourself a certain persona, and then you feel it, and it's your public persona, it becomes your private persona, it's who you are, and it's hard to pull away from that. So it's important to remember that we are here for an important reason. And the silliness, the joking around, should be measured and done for a reason. Sometimes it's important for relationships within a family or outside of a family. Sometimes it's important just to lighten a mood. And sometimes it's very, very important. One time, I shouldn't say this on a recording, but... Okay, we'll do that. One time. What time? I could probably pause it. One time, my sister and I called my parents about a very serious matter that we felt was a number of years ago, and we called my parents and my sister. It can become emotional when it's very, very, a very serious matter. And so we were talking to them, and I presented the issue in a logical presentation. And then my sister became very emotional, and she launched into a very long, very emotional, very upset about something. Just went through an entire thing about what was going on and how troubling it was and how upsetting it was, and da, 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 da. And she just went on and on and on and on. So so she started off, I'm so upset, and da, 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 went on and on and on and on for several minutes over the phone.
So, and my parents are both on the other end of the phone listening. So when she finished, there was silence on the phone. And then my father said, Shifra, can you start again from I'm very upset? I didn't catch all that. So of course that broke the mood. Everybody laughed and broke the mood. So that was important because it was important to break the mood in that case. It was very funny and it broke the mood. But that was because it had become such a, you know, she was very upset and right. So sometimes it's any of you who've ever met my father, he excels at this. So sometimes it's important to break a mood. A mood can get too serious. It can become too upsetting, and sometimes it's important to break a mood. On the other hand, obviously, if a person is upset and it's a serious time on Tisha B'Av, we're not supposed to break that mood. We should be upset over Tisha B'Av. If a person is serious on Yom Kippur and trying to do tshuva, then we don't break the mood. We don't make jokes at that time. There's times to be serious. Chas v'shalom l'avaya. There's times to be serious, not to break a mood. So a person needs to at least have a cheshbon about the joking around, about the silliness, and not let it become their constant persona. That's an important thing for, and again, the different personalities. Some people who are very good at that, they have to watch out not to let it go too far. Other people who tend to be more serious and tend not to be, not able to smile and laugh so much, it's important to be able to let that in as well, and not to let it get, not to let their serious side overtake them. People don't like to be around people who are overly serious. It's not pleasant for people. It's important for socially for a person to make sure that they're able to be calm, pleasant, be able to smile and laugh as well. Finally, is the chevra hara, is a bad chevra. So the bad chevra, the problem with a bad chevra is that we very, very much want acceptance, social acceptance. It's very powerful. It's a force which I think is more powerful than we want to admit, how much we crave social acceptance. Rav Shiva Zachar Rocher of Weinberg used to say that people don't understand how the death penalty is supposed to work. People think that the death penalty prevents crime because someone who is about to commit a crime that is punishable with execution will say, I don't want to do this because I don't want to get killed. So they're scared of being killed. The Rishiv used to say that is not true. A person, when they are in the heat of their anger or their drive to do this crime, there, no fear is going to stop them. They're not afraid of death. They say, I'll get away with it, I'll escape, whatever it is. They're not scared of getting hurt. That's not what stops them. The way the death penalty, he used to say, the way the death penalty prevents crime is because the death penalty projects to everybody in society, this behavior is unacceptable. We don't tolerate. We, as a society, we say this particular behavior is so abhorrent, we are going to kill someone who does this behavior. That sends a message that we, as a society, as a culture, we reject this behavior. Rav Shiva used to say, that rejection is what stops people from doing it, because they don't want to do something that the entire society says is pasnished, is off limits. If we say you just don't go there, then people don't go there. And that's the problem with the types of executions that go on today in the United States. With the executions that go on, they lose this message because of the fact that it takes so long for a person to actually be executed, and because it's done in such a cleaned up way where it is attempted to be as painless as possible, and it is attempted to be as private as possible, then it loses the whole thing. A public hanging, I'm not advocating public hanging, I'm just pointing out to you that a public hanging sends that message that this is not tolerated. We don't tolerate it. He used to say, if you hang him from the highest tree, then that will send the message.
because it says that behavior is not tolerated. We are very influenced by what's around us, and we want acceptance. We desperately want acceptance. So if a person is trying to grow in their Avodas Hashem, but they feel self-conscious about a particular Avodah, that I'm going to look funny, or it's not going to be cool, it's not going to be with it, I'm going to be on the outs with my group, my social group, then they're not going to do it. They're going to not do what they know is right. They're going to not do what will naturally make them grow, because they're afraid of not being accepted within their group. And therefore, it is critical to have a proper chevra for a person to be kind of zehirus and not to stay away from zehirus. The chevra itself is one of the most powerful influences that we have in our lives. And a person who is in a chevra of growth will then want to grow, because growth in a chevra of growth is with it, is cool, is what is expected of everybody. And that promotes growth more than anything else does. The fact that one is in a chevra that is growing. When a person is single, then it's a chevra of single friends most of the time. That's the chevra one is in. Usually it's in one's own community, and that's the chevra. But it doesn't end with marriage. Even though you say, well, with marriage, so then my husband becomes my main chevra, which is essentially true. Obviously, you and your husband grow together, and you're obviously looking for a husband that wants to grow. You're not interested in someone who isn't interested in growth. But at the same time, couples do interact with others in their own social setting, so that young married women interact with young married women. And then as one grows, they interact with women in the same stages that they're in. And this need for a proper chevra does not end with marriage. It continues on and on and on. And any new city that you move to, any new community that you move to, the need for an appropriate chevra is significant. And that is why, with Lamashal, when we bring in Yugalite for the kol, so one of the things that we prefer, if we can get it, is Yungalite who already know each other before they come here. More importantly, that the wives already know each other before they come here. Because they're coming into foreign territory, and even though we do have Baruch Hashem in Atlanta, we have plenty of wonderful people for new women to become involved with, but they're new. And they don't have their chevra with them. They're leaving their chevra behind. So to come to a new place with at least one good friend, it's not just, okay, there's familiarity, there's comfort. It's also that then you have someone who's growing with you. Then you have someone that the two of you are on your growth together. You don't even have to officially say it. You don't have to say, okay, we're going to grow together. You are growing together. That's what you're used to doing. The fertile ground of the yeshiva kollelim, where you have many couples living in the same development and or apartment complex, and that they're all focused on the same type of thing, it does tremendous things for the women in it together. They're in this together. They're all essentially focused on the same type of growth. And the challenges are relatively the same. Obviously, no two challenges are exactly the same, but they're relatively similar. And the chizuk it gives a person to be in it with others who are of like mind and doing something similar to them, that's very, very powerful. That can bolster a person so that when they eventually leave that cocoon and go someplace else where there are fewer women doing what they're doing, that can really carry them. It can boost them. It can carry them along. And sometimes you end up in a place you don't know where you're going to land. Sometimes you end up in a place where the taka isn't any other woman in your stage who's growing the way you are. And in that situation, who do you have that is your chevra? And in that situation, your chevra becomes the women who you stay in touch with from where you were before. I have a very good chaver
that we've been chaverim since yeshiva days. And for many, many years, we were roommates together for 5 years, and we were chavrusas. And this chaver and I had an ongoing seder every Thursday night up until recently, ever since I've been out of, we left Baltimore 15 years ago. So ever since I left up until maybe two, three years ago, we had a Seder almost every single Thursday night. The Seder was to be in touch. It wasn't learning, even though we did tell each other Divrei Torah, but it was just to be in touch. What's going on? What's happening with you? What's happening with me? Milestones, troubles, challenges, issues. Just discuss it. Just talk it over. And what that did is it meant I took my chevra with me. He was my chevra. As I took it with me to Columbus, Ohio, to Atlanta, Georgia. And it meant that I had at least somebody who was in the same stage of like mind, same sense of growth. And therefore, it was a very powerful force that kept me going for the initial years after I left yeshiva. I would still do it. It's just that both of us have become much busier, and it's, you know, in different stages of life now. But Lamaisa, that's for me, that was a very, very powerful thing. It's something that you should not take lightly and take for granted. It's something that's a very, very powerful thing. Even if you end up someplace where, you know, you're focused on kiruv, you're focused on doing outreach, whatever it is, but you gotta have a chevra. You gotta have a chevra. And if the chevra isn't located with you in the same place, then you gotta take it with you from someplace else. But you gotta keep a chevra where you are of someone who's in your stage of life, who is trying to grow the way you are. And that influence is more powerful than almost anything else in your avodas Hashem. Yeah.
Besides from actually a chevra in terms of friends, does Ramcha refer to also, like, let's say the environment someone's working in? Is that a separate category?
That's really a separate category. He's talking more, it is true. It is true that your work environment can be very tame, and that can be very difficult. And it is true. You can find yourself in a very, very difficult place. But Lamaisa, your friends are the ones that are going to be most influential. That's going to be your most powerful influence. Yeah, but of course, a person goes to any place where they're surrounded by tumah, it's going to be very difficult.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it, so that he can continue that site.